If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. So, last week, I mentioned that I had a start already. I was very excited about it. But Neil asked, could he jump ahead with his because, you know, he had a PSA about horse shit.
Mm.
And, you know, that was important. And we've actually since learned that apparently horse shit bags are a thing that needs addressing.
Yeah.
You can stop emailing, you can stop messaging.
Yeah.
We now know. But I'm still hopeful about the branding side of it. What do you reckon?
What, you think listeners are going to buy more Musings horse shit bags?
Possibly, you know. If you build it, they will come.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just wanted to get that out the way about the horse shit. We now know that they do in fact exist.
Well, if we can get a minimum of 100 pre-orders,
yeah,
where they put down a deposit, I'll get some med.
Okay.
Other than that, no. Because they just sit in the shed.
Yeah. Just sit in the shed.
Mm.
Anyway, that's all to say that we're going to be talking about the starter that I wanted to now.
Oh, it's not about horse shit.
No, it's not. I just wanted to address that we now know. You don't have to keep informing us that we're wrong and they do exist.
Right.
No, so what I wanted to talk about was actually a continuation from the episode before last week. Do you remember the oddity about the
Airbnb?
Well, it wasn't an Airbnb, but yeah.
It wasn't an Airbnb?
No, it was, they booked the house on booking.com.
Oh.
But you remember the oddity?
Yeah. The knobhead in the wall.
Yes. So, there's an update. The man behind the wall has spoken out.
What, like, how he's dare you?
He's come forward. And he's given his side of the story.
His side? He was in a wall.
Well, he has a few things to say. Would you like to hear? I'm sure the listeners would love to hear.
The only way you can side with him is if he said, they put me in the fucking wall.
It's not a competition. I'm not saying you have to pick a side.
Mm.
I'm just saying I'm sure a lot of the mortals would love to hear. I enjoyed reading this.
Okay.
Now you're ready.
Go on.
So, he stated that there was nothing, quote, sinister about the situation.
But
you were in a wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in a wall with your knob at, probably.
So this was his sum up of the situation. You ready?
Mm.
He said, quote, well, I had a group of people who came to my house. They took a panel down off the wall after arriving straight in and called the police. That's what happened. That seems a little bit... You're giving the bare bones of it. You're skipping a few beats.
You were beating summer.
Now, when asked if he was the man behind the wall, you know, because he was the owner.
Hmm.
Maybe it was his brother behind there. Who knows?
Could have been.
He said, quote, I was, yeah, in my room and I have a back exit. I'm entitled to stay there. It's my house.
But you weren't in a room. You was in the wall.
He's saying it's a room. Okay. When asked if he specifically informed the family that his room was situated behind a wall in the house, he said, quote, well, I'm obviously going to be behind a wall in another room separate from the main house.
Smart bastard.
Like, is that out? Like, don't be such a dick.
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking prick.
They should have asked him, so this room, does it have a door? Or is the wall the door?
No, no, he's claiming he had a separate exit.
Not entrance.
Well, look.
Yeah.
So he's dismissed the criticism leveled against him and maintained that there was nothing improper about him remaining in his own home. Quote, "They say it was behind a wall. It was in a room with its own exit. There's nothing wrong with that. To describe a wall as something sinister is very unusual." He's flipping it. They're the unusual ones. They're the strange ones here, Neil.
He's a fucking idiot. Right. Just in case this landlord is listening, I've got a bit of advice for him. Next time someone says to you, "Penny for your thoughts," sell.
What?
Next time someone says to him, "Penny for your thoughts," sell.
I don't understand.
But his thoughts. If I have
sell
to
your thoughts.
Yeah, if I have to explain it. You know the saying?
Yes, penny for your thoughts. Yes.
Sell.
I think it's just going right over my head. Will we move on? Leave it for the listeners.
Okay. I can't believe you don't get that.
I don't get it at all. Sell your thoughts.
Like his thought is that much of an idiot.
Yeah.
His thoughts are just not the worthless.
Right.
So if someone offers him a penny, sell.
I've never heard that before.
Penny for your thoughts?
No, I've heard penny for your thoughts, but you're saying sell. Is that a thing? Is that like a follow-on answer?
No.
This is just you.
But my dad said it.
Okay, well, do you know what, listeners? Let me know if when Neil said that, you were like, I get it, because I fucking didn't.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, right, so the wall, the partition.
Mm.
I saw a photo of it. It didn't look great. I understood their concern.
Yeah.
You know, he's downplaying it, being like, oh, it's really weird to think a wall is weird and blah, 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 blah. It did look a bit strange.
Well, it's gonna.
Well, you haven't seen it. How would you know?
Because it's a fucking wall with an hole in it.
No, but there's a bit of wall over it. There's like the partition there over it is what I'm saying to you.
Right.
It's not like... Right, so say you were booking it. Because bear in mind, they didn't just arrive and get like a key out of a lockbox. He was there to greet them.
Right.
If it was my house and say there was some work getting done and it was like a makeshift wall for the time being before it got filled in, I would say, here, look, you know, I apologise, that's not great, but, so, you know, whatever. But he's acting as if like, it's fine, it's not a wall, it looks odd.
Right.
There's a reason it's like that.
So, order of events. They arrived, the landlords greeted him.
Yes.
Obviously, they thought everything was fine, so he vacated the house.
Walked. After doing his drying. Drying his washing.
Yeah. So then he vacated the house, walked around the building to come in through another door to go into this secret room.
Well, that's what he's claiming, that he has another entrance exit. But we don't know. As far as the family said, you know, he did his, he finished doing his washing and then fucked off.
So
they don't know. He may have come straight back into the house. Well, he would have had to have come back into the house because he was using the washing machine.
Yeah.
So even if he went through his, you know, separate entrance.
So it wouldn't be as bad. It's the hole in the wall.
It is the hole in the wall. And again, like he said that this was his room in his home. He's entitled to use it. So the question was put to him, Neil.
Mm.
What about the toilet? What's the situation there?
Shower. And all.
Well, no, you could shower like before the guests arrive. Yeah. But like you need to use the toilet multiple times a day.
Yeah.
So he said, right, when asked about the toilet, he said, quote, "How did I go to the toilet? I have a bathroom there."
In that room?
I'm guessing that's what he means, yes. Or is he just being stubborn saying, I have a bathroom in my house, I'm entitled to use it? Because that's the attitude, yeah, I'm getting off him. It's my house, it's my house.
Yeah.
When it was put to him that his residing behind the wall was a bit odd, to say the least, he said, quote, "Well, if you want to describe it like that, as something sinister, there's nothing I can do about that. But if there has to be a room, there has to be a wall. There's no getting around that. If there's no wall, there's no separation." He also insisted that despite the stated suspension of his property from booking.com, quote, "I'm actually full. I'm full. There's no availability. The last I looked at it, all the bookings I wanted were there. I had my quota for the year, you know." It's kind of, I feel like you're saying a lot of words, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When again confronted with the abnormality of the situation, he said, quote, Well, it's being described in an unusual way. There's nothing you can do about that, really. I think it's much ado about nothing.
I don't even know what to say to this. I don't even know what to say to this prick.
He seems kind of defensive. You know, if he had come out and been like, that's not the case. It didn't happen the way she said it, but I feel he's more confrontational.
Yes.
It's if he had been like, no, that's not actually true. What happened was blah, blah, blah. But he's like, they came in, they ripped my wall down. This is, you know, police were called.
Yeah.
He's leaving a lot of plot holes there, really, isn't there? There's a lot of gaps there.
Look, he's got no argument. He's got an hole in the wall. A hidden hole in the wall. That's the end of it.
I'm very sus of the entire situation. Look, I want to hear the other side of it. You know?
You always do.
Two sides to every story.
Mm.
He's done nothing to reassure me. If anything, he's put me more on edge.
Yes.
And the whole thing of, well, I'm fully booked. All the bookings I want are there. It's like, what are you talking about? Why are you acting weird?
Yeah.
You know?
Just gotta remember there were kids there.
Kids, yeah. No good.
Like, that makes it even worse. So is he going to get arrested?
No, there has been no charges or anything like that. The guards have confirmed that.
And he's allowed to continue. Oh, no, booking, they suspended him, didn't they?
Booking.com suspended him. He's claiming that he's still fully booked. He's kind of making out as if, like, ah, no, it's fine. No harm, no foul kind of thing. Now, I don't know what the truth is there.
Hmm.
In regards to his status on the site, but yeah.
Right.
No good.
No.
I feel like I've really brought you down. I thought you would have enjoyed that, you know, getting an update. You seem, I've ruined you for the day.
No, I'm not down. I'm just a bit confused of what his angle is. Like you said, been more confrontational than just explaining.
Look, I didn't hear him speak. I'm reading quotes. But that's how it reads to me.
Mm.
It's very kind of like, there's nothing weird about it. You're weird.
The sort of thing I'd probably do.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd immediately turn it on the other person.
Yeah, I'd get me back up.
Yeah.
And be like, well, you opened the fucking hole in the wall. So it's on you.
100%.
But when
you'd be there with your shit bucket in hand, getting ready to empty it, being like, what the fuck do you think you're doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a bit of respect.
Can't wash my clothes. Can't fucking do this. Princess. So, part two.
That's right, Neil. Part two of the murder of Natalie McNally.
Mm. Now, this one has been a bit of a thorn in my side.
Has it, yeah?
Yeah. This has probably been the hardest one to work on. And this is episode 150. So once we'd finished recording,
mm-hmm.
I edited. Megan always has to proof listen because she doesn't trust me editing skills. So I got started doing the social media posts, and I'd say at least three times Megan was like, stop looking at that. Stop looking at that. We've got part two.
Because we've still got part two to do.
Stop.
And Neil kept coming to me and like, oh, did you know this? Did you hear? But I'm like, Neil, stop. In a week's time, you can look into this case as much as you want. Any little details that we don't talk about in this episode, you know, go off, go find them.
Mm.
But until we finished part two,
mm.
just, you know, let up on it.
Yeah.
Just leave it be. So in part one, we talked about the discovery of Natalie's body. We talked a bit about who Natalie was as a person, the two lead suspects who were her current partner and her ex-partner. We discussed her partner at the time, Stephen's attempts to heavily push the blame onto her ex, and how Stephen's behaviour led to the police honing in on him after he'd been cleared as a suspect. And of course, we also discussed how, after Stephen's laptop had been seized, police uncovered that the live stream he was participating in on the night of the murder had actually been pre-recorded, thus destroying his alibi.
Yeah, I'm still trying to rack my brain how he did that and YouTube was like, yeah, he was live streaming.
Yeah. Like I said, the police said it was like a quick email just shot back to them. So I'm guessing they just kind of checked the account and said, oh, yeah, it was live at that time. Grand.
Right, yeah.
They didn't kind of look into it. But it seems a bit odd to me when it's the police contacting you. You think they'd be a little bit more thorough.
Yeah.
So where we left off, Stephen had just been rearrested and charged with murder. You know, something that really bothered me about Stephen blaming Natalie's ex, other than, you know, the obvious of it being a fucking awful thing to do, is that, you know, if you're going to commit murder and have this whole story set up, maybe don't do it when there's a massive event on. You know, this was during the World Cup. The likelihood of people having recorded something, being out with others or seen out is a lot higher.
Yeah.
It was a very risky game.
The other thing with, like, I'm not saying this is okay, but because I'm fairly certain her ex, so her ex has got a partner.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain he was cheating on her with someone else. And because of Stephen, that unraveled. So now he's got, so now the ex has problems with his current partner because of Stephen.
Sorry, you're saying that you think Natalie's ex was cheating on his current partner?
Yes.
And because the police were now investigating him because of Stephen.
And he's had to say, I was messaging, because weren't it something to do with he was messaging someone, or there was something in part one where it's like,
Natalie and her ex were still in communication, and there were some emails that he sent to Natalie that were not great.
I don't know what I'm going on then.
I'm not entirely sure what you're getting at, but I'm actually glad you brought that up, because on that note, I do want to say, you know, we mentioned the relationship dynamic here. You know, it gets a little bit messy, a little bit of overlap, the back and forth. Clearly, Natalie and her ex still had feelings for each other. You know, I bring all this up because it's kind of relevant to Stephen's accusations. And, you know, as we'll see when we talk about the trial, it kind of comes into it a bit. But overall, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't really matter. That's their personal business. If there was a bit of an overlap or whatever, like, I'm not saying it's okay, but who the fuck are we to judge? None of our business.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, because I know you straight away were like, oh, I'm side-eyeing Natalie, you know, as soon as I said it. And I don't want that to be the thing that people focus on.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, today, Neil, we are going to be talking a bit more about Steve McCullough, his shocking behaviour, as well as the trial and the aftermath. So, let's, regrettably, talk about Stephen.
Can I just say, when I was getting images of him, even without
smug,
the murder, he's a prick.
Smug little bastard.
You can tell he thinks he's...
10 men.
Like, just a fucking babe magnet sort of thing.
Babe magnet? I haven't heard that in years.
Oh.
Babe magnet.
But yeah, he's just a sleazeball. A fucking... Yeah. You could tell you were a sleazy bastard.
Smug little shit.
Which I don't get, because looking at Natalie, she looked so fucking like sweet and innocent. What the fuck was she doing with that smug, like fucking... I bet you were a womanizer as well. I get a lot from pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet he didn't think...
Well, do you know, that would go hand in hand with your skills reviewing CCTV. You know?
Well, this is
You're very good with imagery, aren't you?
I looked at one image of him and I was like...
Bastard.
He thinks he deserves, like... From looking at one picture of him...
Yeah.
He thinks that, say if Natalie was doing the same job as him, that she should be on less money.
Yes. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It's like, equal pay. What?
Yeah, no, he's just... I think... Smug, arrogant, entitled. You get a lot from a picture.
Tosser.
That too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like us to get off topic, is it? Or kind of stray slightly, is it? But we'll rein it back in. We'll get on with the episode. Now, Stephen, if you hadn't already guessed it, is no good. I would go as far to say the man is a complete and utter shite hawk.
That's just your personal opinion.
That's just me personally. I don't want to force anyone's hand here.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to sway or influence.
Oxygen thief is the word what comes to mind.
There's another one. Yes, very good. Yeah. Now, his best friend was a woman named Anne McCullough. She described him as loud, jolly, and boisterous, the biggest personality in the room. Equally, she said that there was times if he was to become angry, he would suck up all of the air out of the room. Now, that's horrible to be around someone like that.
What? They're just...
Don't be so fucking stupid.
Do you know, if I were a serial killer, that would be my nickname.
Air sucker?
No, the oxygen thief. Strangling the life out of her.
That's a bit fucking dark.
I think that's a good...
So your method, if you become a serial killer, is strangulation. You've decided on this already.
It'd have to be, right. So I could get the nickname oxygen thief.
What the fuck is wrong with you? No, but you take my point with the, you know, being around someone like that, feeling like you're walking on eggshells when they're angry. It puts you on edge. It's awful. It's very, very, very stressful.
Like, I do know I can be like that at times.
Yes, you can, yeah.
Yeah.
But we've had this conversation many a time. You know, like, it's all right to feel angry. It's just about how you express it. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think sometimes with yourself, you can kind of struggle to express it correctly, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's perfect.
Nobody is perfect, Neil. The thing is, as long as you're willing to kind of work on stuff and kind of recognize things, you know?
Yeah, no, for me, it's just more, if someone's done something which is clearly deliberate to piss me off.
No, but that's what you think.
Like,
that's your
done with you.
But that's your perception. You think that. There's been plenty of times where you've said to me, they've done that to me. I'm like, where are you getting that from? And I'm asking you to, like, talk me through it. Yeah. I'm not seeing what you're seeing. Do you know what I mean?
It's like you've put that extra effort in and gone out of your way to come up with a plan to piss me off.
Yeah.
And ruin my day.
But not everything's about you. Do you get what I mean? You fixate on that they've done it against you. This is about me. You know what I mean?
It's a bit like sometimes I feel really bad. You know, if I'm driving somewhere and there's a car in front and they're doing like 20 kilometers under the speed limit and I've got places to go, you know, I'm either going to the gym.
Going to the gym.
You know, or the shop, or work. And I've got this car in front of me doing 20 kilometers under the speed limit. And I'm there like, I'm immediately that this is because of me. They're doing this to slow me down. They think they're clever.
Yeah.
And then I'll overtake them and they'll be about 95-year-old woman. And it's like, oh, okay.
Well, maybe they shouldn't be on the road though.
Well, no, I agree. Yeah. I've always said it.
Just
people,
as dangerous.
People
yeah.
who drive too slow are just as fucking dangerous as people speeding.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone fucking says. But yeah. Where did we go? How did we get onto this?
It's just constant tangents on this fucking show.
There can't be anyone left listening to us who are... just want to.
If there's anyone new, this is the first episode they've clicked on, which I hope not. It's a part two. What kind of a savage clicks onto a part two as their first episode?
I have actually seen it before on our episodes, you know, on our downloads.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times part two's got more downloads than the fucking part one.
It's just some arsehole looking for the conclusion.
Oh, is that what it is?
Possibly. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, you came to the conclusion end of part one, so they missed that.
I mean, I kind of said to you, if you weren't interested in hearing any more of us, you kind of knew.
Yeah.
Without all the details, you know, it's Stephen.
Yeah. His name's Stephen.
So, you know, tangent aside, you know, Stephen with this big personality, you know, kind of the best in the world, but equally can be quite difficult to deal with at times. I have to say, you know, I'm always kind of wary. People love to shit on the quiet ones, but... I don't know. I'm just so wary of people with a big personality. It's what are you trying to hide behind the big, loud, boisterous, you know, life of the party person? I've got more of an eye on them myself.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm a quiet one. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of in the middle, I'd say.
You're a louder personality, though.
No, I'm louder than thee.
So, on the pod, obviously I do a lot of talking because I'm telling the case. But in our day-to-day lives, I'm kind of... I mean, you drown me out a lot of the time. And I don't mean that in a negative to you. You're just a louder, bigger personality than me.
Mm.
If we're sat in a group of people talking, you say for every 1,000 words you speak, I'll speak 50 to 100. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. You've actually sat and counted, haven't you, before?
I have not, but I might start. I get a clicker thing. So, previous to his relationship with Natalie, Stephen had been in an on-off 7-year relationship with another woman. She claimed that he had been physically abusive towards her on multiple occasions. And during their relationship, his ex-girlfriend had given birth to their child, which, sadly, was stillborn.
So do you think, even though he was a piece of shit, do you think that, like, escalated him?
No, absolutely not.
Oh.
Obviously, going through something like that, you know, it's absolutely devastating. And understandably, she sought counselling. Now, the sessions were held in the home where she lived with Stephen. But little did she know, he had been secretly recording these sessions.
What a bastard.
Yeah. And I'll do you one worse than that. She only found out later after police informed her.
What was he doing with them?
He, you know, just arrogant, jumped up prick, had to know everything, had to be involved, had to have control over her thoughts, her private thoughts.
That's insane.
Yep. It's twisted. And that is something we've actually talked about. You know, if we got into an argument, Neil will often say to me, I should record you right now so you can hear yourself back.
Yeah.
And I hate when you say that because it's so creepy to me and it's something I would never do to you, even when you're being completely irrational. No, I try to talk to you in that moment. I don't be like, I should fucking record
you. No, no, no. When I say record you, it's not just you, it's both of us, because there's a lot of times when we'll be in an argument and I'll say, you said this. Or it'll be the other way around. You'll say that I said something.
Yeah.
And it's right, say if I've said, earlier you fucking said this, and you'll go, I absolutely did not. And you'll be there, stone-faced, fucking confident. And it's like, we need to start recording this because I heard you fucking say that. And you're adamant that you didn't. That's what I mean. It's not like you should hear yourself, meaning the tone of you.
Yeah.
And you should be ashamed. That's not what I mean. I'm meaning I heard you. Right. Say if I went, you wound me up earlier. You knew what you were doing. You called me a prick. And you go, I did not call you a prick. We need to record it because I heard you call me a prick.
Yeah.
So it's either I'm mental or
I'm lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you're mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if I've ever done that, it's never intentional that I'm like trying to fucking gaslight you or anything like that. It's, you know, sometimes you say something in the moment and then like if you go, you said this, and you're trying to quote exactly, and I'm like, I can't remember exactly what I said to quote back to you.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So back to Stephen.
Back to Stephen. So, like I said, recording his ex's, you know, most private thoughts, vulnerable thoughts.
I wouldn't even do that.
It's...
You can rest easy. I would not.
What do you mean by I wouldn't even?
I wouldn't do that.
So, right, but I
rest
never...
Rest assured, if you get therapy...
Yeah.
I won't record it.
Oh, thank you.
You can rest easy on that one.
But, right, okay. Other than, like, your own admission, you know, at times you can be a bit... you know, if you're angry, it can kind of take up a lot of energy.
Mm.
Other than that, I'm not comparing you to Stephen. You know?
I know you're not. I'm just clarifying.
No, but you're saying, like, I wouldn't even do that. As if, like, you're so horrible, but even I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, you're the marker.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that. So back to Stephen.
Back to this fucking episode. Guys, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on today. So, yes, recording his ex, horrible, violating thing to do. But this wouldn't be the only time that Stephen had covertly recorded others. Now, after the death of Natalie, Stephen played the role of grieving boyfriend and father-to-be very well, even convincing Natalie's family of his suffering.
Oh, that would be the hardest thing for their...
Yeah.
Oh my God. If they comforted him.
Yes, they did.
Sat and grieved with him.
Yes, and during a vigil for Natalie, the family even allowed Stephen to create a video tribute for her using family photos and videos. So they're giving him access to their most private, you know, loving kind of, those moments yeah. that they had with her, not knowing that he's the one who took them from her.
Please tell me he didn't.
Took her from them.
Please tell me he didn't make that to put on his YouTube.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, like I said, it was for a vigil.
Oh, right, okay.
Her family were welcoming, loving, and empathizing. Stephen and Natalie hadn't been together long, but they still recognized him as someone who had been in her life and was hurting. Sadly, Stephen, he totally and disgracefully abused their caring nature, even going as far as to leave his phone in the McNally family's home to record their private conversations.
Fuck off.
As he had done with his ex. Yeah.
So is he doing that for his amusement?
No, I think he, again, it's the control thing. He wants to know what's being said by who. Is anyone saying something about me? Where are they thinking? Has my accusations worked? Are they looking at her boyfriend? What's, you know?
Yeah. And it'd also be paranoia of, are they onto me?
I think it is totally about control with him.
Yeah.
Once proceedings had begun, Stephen was denied bail for fear of interference with witnesses. And as we've just learned about what a manipulative, dangerous prick he is, I think this decision was the correct one. On the 12th of January 2024, Stephen pleaded not guilty. After multiple delays, the trial began on the 16th of February 2026.
So you know how he's pled not guilty?
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'd love to hear why he staged a live stream if he's not guilty. Did you just do that for shits and gigs?
Well, during the trial, Stephen's defense conceded that, yes, the video had been pre-recorded, but that during the time of the live stream, Stephen had been at home drinking that night, and he'd actually fallen asleep around the time of the murder, which I believe you said that in the last episode, Neil. Why didn't he just say he had fallen asleep?
Mm.
So I don't think Stephen ever really addressed why he had done it, but that's essentially what they're going with. He pre-recorded, you know, almost as if like, oh, it's a night off for me. Leave it playing, I suppose. And I'm just going to have a drink and relax.
Right.
And that, you know, and you know, that could have been part of his alibi should the live stream have fallen through, because it was said that there may have been or possibly was some friction with him and Natalie, with him drinking. I'm guessing they had made some sort of an agreement that while she was pregnant, neither of them would drink or, you know, something like that.
Okay.
He was saying that he thought she'd be pissed off at him for having a drink.
I've always thought that's the sort of thing I'd do. Like, say if you were up the duff.
Yeah.
So you couldn't smoke, you couldn't vape, you couldn't drink.
Couldn't eat sushi. Unbelievable.
Well, that wouldn't bother me. I would, to make it easier. Coffee, get fucked. I'd be drinking my coffee.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always thought I'd be more like that. You know, like say, so I'm eating a lot of meat. Say if you were like, smell of burgers is just instantly making me feel sick.
Mm.
I'd knock it on the head.
Yeah.
Until you spat the chabby out, and then I'd go back. What's up?
Well, see, neither of us are big drinkers anyway. So it's not like you would have to be like giving up drink.
Mm.
And I think if that was the case, you know, if you were just having like a beer or two with your dinner or something,
mm.
I don't think it would really bother me. That's kind of the case anyway. Like, again, you don't drink a lot, but you would drink more than me. You know?
Yeah, no, but the way I look at it is you're having to sacrifice a lot to spit a chabby out.
my entire fucking body.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, just to make it easier.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not, like you said, you're not a big drinker.
Mm.
But there is nights where you're like, can't wait to have a Krabby's.
Oh, I love a Krabby's.
So you imagine if you're sat there with big belly out and I sit down with a
That's because of the takeaway.
And I sit down with a bottle of Krabby's, you're going to be pissed.
Well, if you specifically went for a Krabby's.
Yeah.
I mean, usually, I mean, at most, generally speaking, I have one a week.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when I get my takeaway, I have my pizza and a Krabby's, that's my treat.
Yeah.
You know?
Say I'm like 4 or 5 a week.
Yeah. The prosecution described the murder as, quote, planned, calculated, and premeditated, and that Stephen had, quote, put on an act to conceal his crimes. The exact motive for Stephen's crimes are unknown, but it is believed that he had found messages on Natalie's phone that he did not like, with some messages being sexually explicit, and in others, she had expressed her interest in ending her relationship with Stephen in the new year.
Oh.
Mm.
Ah, so.
Yeah.
Because I kept honing in on the pregnancy.
Yeah. Which is fair.
What?
No, it's fair for you to think she's pregnant. Is that his motive? He doesn't want a child. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, you need to elaborate with this.
Sorry.
Yeah, that'd be fair.
Which is fair.
So it's the control thing. If she was the one ending it.
Yeah.
Not on my watch.
Yeah. And her intention, you know, it was probably, you know, sweet in, you know, in saying end it in the new year. Let's get through the Christmas period. I don't want to break up with someone right before. You know, it's not very nice. But if you were to find that and feel like they're planning this.
I was the opposite years ago. When I was at school and, you know, you'd have your girlfriend at school. As soon as it would get in there, Valentine's Day, Christmas or the birthday. No. Save your money. I'm not joking.
Right. Yeah. You weren't great years ago, were you?
No.
No. Now, obviously, if you were to find these messages, you know, it would be upsetting, yes. But the thing is, we're talking about Stephen here, who we know is a horrible, abusive bastard. Who knows what Natalie may have experienced in the short time that they were together?
Well, I also have another question. Well, not a question. You've just said, you know, yeah, it'd be horrible reading their messages. Let's not sugarcoat it. Why are you reading their messages?
Oh, no, of course. There's no excusing it. But what I'm saying to you is, like, let's say you had a hunch. Let's say Stephen's like, I can fucking feel it. She's messaging someone, whatever it may be. And he looks and it turns out he's right.
Yeah.
You know, he was right to feel concerned.
Mm.
But the thing is, my concern for her loyalty to Stephen during that time is low to non-existent.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not excusing cheating, but they were together just a few months. We're not talking about a, you know, years-long relationship. They're living together, all the rest, you know. They had met and been together a few months. I think the fact that she was pregnant, you know, some people forget that they had been together such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
I mean, in reality, they would have still been getting to know each other.
Yeah.
It's only a few months.
Yeah, because like, I'd say we knew each other for what, 6 months before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
And we moved fast.
We did, yeah. And the point I'm kind of making here is, again, if you're together and you're saying we're a couple, yeah, obviously, you'd hope you'd be faithful to each other.
Mm.
But there's a lot of people who are seeing each other. They're not necessarily exclusive.
Dipping the toe in water.
Yeah.
So to speak.
And especially, to my understanding, a lot of people use dating apps. You know, you're dating. You're not in a relationship.
See, like,
no, I know Natalie was with him, but I'm just saying it was a few months. It wasn't they had their whole setup, they had their family there.
Yeah.
And she kind of like broke the unit.
Yeah.
Stephen's reaction is very big to me. If I had been with someone for a few months and found out that they were cheating, I'd be like, right, okay, well, wash my hands of you, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's I don't want to say no harm, no foul, but
yeah,
I got out early, if that's the case.
But like, so you explained to me, but over here is the same as what I saw America as. But when I was a lad growing up, you were in a relationship or you wasn't. There was no dating multiple people and fucking...
No. I'm not saying that's necessarily the case anywhere. I'm saying I don't agree with someone trying to like trap someone into a relationship. Either you're with me or you're not.
Mm.
I don't think that's okay. I think people should be straightforward with one another and say, I'm looking for a relationship.
Yeah.
Or I'm looking to go out, see where it goes. I'm not exclusive to you. I just think people need to be a bit more transparent about their intentions avoid this, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you could have an open relationship and you're perfectly happy with it, or you may want complete and utter loyalty to one another. Either is fine as long as every party is in agreement, you know? You sound like you were just a right prick when you were younger.
No, it wasn't just me. It was what it... It's how it was.
That northern mentality, is it?
Must have been. Like, there were no seeing. It wasn't, oh, we're seeing each other or anything. It was, we're going out. You ask someone out and then that's it. They were your bird.
That sounds a bit crazy to me. That's just like trapping someone.
And I mean from like, what was my first girlfriend? Like 11, 12? I was 11 or 12 as well.
Right, yes.
Before you fucking start.
Thank God for that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, like 11 or 12. And it was your girlfriend. It lasted about 2 weeks, if you're lucky. But yeah, it was your girlfriend. It wasn't, oh, I'm seeing her and I'm seeing her.
Okay.
That wasn't the norm.
As a now 37-year-old man, do you see my point? Like, could...
Yes.
With the age you are, could you be bothered your fuck with kind of being trapped, being locked down immediately?
Yeah, I wish it had been more of a thing.
Bit more relaxed. There's not as much pressure on everyone.
Mm.
Yeah. I think for me, if someone said, we're going out now, I'd be like, the fuck we are. I'd run, even if I liked the person, I'd run a mile because who are you to tell me?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way. Really straying a lot today. Do you know what it is, lads? We're recording late. And I think that always happens when we record in the evening.
Yeah.
Now, neighbours of Natalie testified that they had heard screaming at about 9 p.m. on the night of the murder. Anne McCullough, Stephen's former best friend, he had actually tried to rope her into his plans. And she ended up being a star witness for the prosecution during the trial.
How do you mean rope her in?
So, what Stephen had planned... He wanted her to come with him to the murder scene. Now looking back, she's horrified to know that he wanted to expose her to this. He was willing to traumatise his best friend just to further his lies.
Fucking hell.
It's absolutely fucking twisted.
Sadistic.
So, obviously, Anne, she's wiped her hands of him.
Mm.
She is disgusted with him. But she made a point to say about Natalie that she was a wonderfully kind person who would have been a great mother. And she herself had started getting bits and pieces together for the baby and had planned to make blankets and hats for Natalie's child. And that seems to be a reoccurring theme here. Everyone was very quick to say she would have been an amazing mother.
Yeah.
Stephen's ex-girlfriend testified to the physical abuse she had suffered during their on-off 7-year relationship. As well as the difficulty of giving birth to a stillborn baby and the total disregard Stephen had for her and the situation by recording her private conversations with her counsellor.
Yeah, I can't believe that one. That's...
awful. There's nothing else to say. It's just awful. Yeah. Like,
but again, I think I've said it before on the podcast. I've definitely said it to you. I really, like... I really don't like it when they use ex-partners to testify.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It can be a concern, yes.
Yeah, because let's say I've got an ex and I'm on trial for suspicion of murder of my current partner and they get your fucking ex-partner in to testify who you never laid a finger on.
Mm-hmm.
But you cheated on her.
Yeah.
So
you,
it's like the, you know, the... not woman scorned.
You could have been awful to a person in a million ways. Doesn't make you a murderer, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they go, oh, I could see this coming. He used to twat me about. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. They're looking as an opportunity for revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. The taxi driver who had picked Stephen up the night of the murder, he testified that he had picked a man up outside of a pub that night and had dropped him off at a home, which we now know as Stephen's home, 11 minutes past 11. That's two cases on the trot where taxi drivers are helping put killers behind bars.
Yeah.
Unsung heroes, Neil.
They really are.
You know who else testified?
Go on.
Natalie's ex, who Stephen had accused.
How could he?
Well, his name was dragged through the mud. He was forced into this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was forced to be a massive figure in this case. So when asked if he had anything to do with her death, he said, quote, no, not one bit. He then looked to Stephen and said, quote, he did it. A blind person could see that. He noted that, quote, Natalie would have been a fantastic mother. I have no doubt about that. He described her as, quote, the nicest girl ever. She would have done anything for anybody. He also said, quote, I wish I'd been better to her. We were two consenting adults. I know the texts don't look good. I'm not proud of any of this. I definitely took advantage of Natalie. I feel horrible about it. If I sink myself and get myself in more trouble, I don't care. This is about Natalie.
That'd have been an awkward drive home with Mrs.
This man is fucking showing up, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know his current partner is going to be like, she's the one that got away, is it? Is that what it is?
Well, she actually spoke the trial as well.
Oh.
So this is what I mean. People are showing up for this, you know?
Oh, okay.
So there may have been, like I said, some of his behavior of his own admission was not great. But like I said, this isn't about any of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, do you know what I've got?
What was that laugh?
Because do you know what I've got in my head? Stephen sat there, and then when Natalie's ex, his current partner, stands to speak, I wonder if Stephen's like, the fuck has it got to do with you?
Yeah, but again, these people are putting themselves on blast. You know, like we mentioned in the previous episode, you know, she had said that, you know, he had put his hands on me.
Mm.
And she later said, you know, that isn't true. I was angry. We were fighting. He
yeah.
did send some not great messages,
mm.
but he didn't hurt me.
Mm.
Catherine Kearns, head of the PPS Serious Crime Unit, said, quote, I've never seen that happen before, when the person framed for the murder actually fronts up and comes to the court and faces days of questioning. But that man was always very keen to assist the prosecution, which he did under intense pressure.
Yeah, he's a good man.
This is what I mean. I have to agree. Of course, there is some behaviour there that is not great. But at the end of the day, he is now trying to do right. I think it shows a huge amount of courage and integrity for this man to have shown up and said, yes, I fucked up. I'm going to put myself on blast so we can get to the truth and do right by Natalie. The judge stated that although there was a significant amount of evidence relating to Natalie's ex, he was not the one on trial, and he urged the jury to focus on whether or not they believe that Stephen had committed the murder. Because again, it kept kind of coming back round to him, and he was having to, you know, stand up to these questions, which
yeah.
really, the fact that they had a bit of a fucked up relationship and, you know, it wasn't great, is neither here nor there, really.
Yeah. They should have just kept focusing on Stephen.
Yeah. If he wanted to testify just to, you know, anything Natalie had said about the relationship or whatever, the messages about, you know, she was going to break up with Stephen if she had said that to him, which, you know, I assume he was aware.
Yeah.
That's fair. But essentially, this man went to court and was defending himself while someone else was on trial for murder. It's insane.
Yeah.
The trial lasted just shy of 5 weeks. And on the 23rd of March, 2026, after a 2-hour deliberation, Stephen was unanimously found guilty for the murder of Natalie. Natalie's family cheered and applauded the jury, the prosecution, and the investigators. Hours after the verdict, a spokesperson for YouTube stated that Steven's channel had been removed for, quote, violating our creator responsibility policies. Hours after the verdict, Neil.
Hours after the verdict, the channel was removed.
Yes. So bear in mind, this is this year.
What?
Yes. The murder was committed in December of 22.
Yeah.
It was this year when there was a verdict. And then YouTube acted.
It's funny you should say that about his channel. So when I was, you know, getting the photos for the social media posts for part one.
Yeah.
Because it was a YouTuber, I had to do it. I searched for his channel. But for what his username were, which I can't remember what it were. Something thick. And then, you know how it does that Google AI overview?
Yeah.
So I searched his name and I put, is his YouTube channel still there?
Yeah.
And the AI overview said, no, YouTube took down his channel permanently. But some... The only fucking word I've got is sadistic. Some sadistic bastard has archived all of his videos and started a new channel with his old YouTube name, and then it says archive.
Yeah.
And it is uploaded every single video back onto YouTube. It's still there now.
Mm.
And the shocking one, the live stream's there.
Yeah.
Why? And it's there like in the fucking, you know, the description. It's like, this isn't done out of malice and fucking all this. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I mean, look.
He might have had fans, but...
Yeah, no, look. Curiosity, I would say, generally speaking, is a good thing. At times, it can be very wrong.
Hmm.
Like I mentioned, when I'm looking to a case, you know, unless something is kind of relatively easy to access, I'm not going to go digging and digging and digging. I think there's some things I don't need to know.
Yeah.
You guys don't need to know. What good is it really going to do us to invade someone's privacy? And again, that kind of voyeurism thing, those tendencies to, I have to know.
Mm.
Go watch a fucking reality show when someone's choosing to put themselves out there. Don't do it to people like this.
Yeah.
It's not fucking right, you know? During sentencing, the judge described Natalie as a strong, loving, and independent young woman and said that Stephen's crimes were, quote, a brutal and senseless murder planned in remorseless detail, cold-blooded, and calculated. He stated that Stephen's culpability was, quote, extremely high due to the level of premeditation. He said that Natalie's family had suffered, quote, a depth of pain that those of us who have not cannot understand. He also praised the family for their exemplary demeanour during proceedings and stated that they were an essential part of justice being served.
Yeah, they seem a strong family.
Strong. Close, you know, just they're kind of like the example, you know what I mean? Like the family who are showing up for her,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like I said, listening to her brother speak about her, and they couldn't find any word other than she was the best,
yeah,
that's how it was. It's like she was just the best,
simply, you know the what I best,
mean? Better than all the rest,
yeah, and a massive fucking shout out to the ex,
yeah.
And the current partner of the ex.
I don't want to keep harping on it, but, you know, I think some people might get caught up in the, no, fuck him, he did a bad thing. But if we're never going to let someone try and correct their behavior, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
What's the fucking point?
Yeah.
You can do a bad thing and not overall be a bad person. And he even admitted, you know, he was heavy on the drink at the time and said, look, I'm coming to terms with it now. I'm trying to fucking sort it out. I shouldn't have done these things, but I've done it now. I can't change that. What do you want from the man?
Yeah.
Lads. Fucking hell.
Unless you're Stephen, you can't change then.
That's repeated, horrific, extreme behaviour.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm not saying it's all right to get, you know, shit-faced and send abusive messages. But there's some people when they drink, they're just not the same person and, you know.
Yep.
It's a separate issue to what Stephen did. Now, during a pre-sentencing hearing, Stephen referred to himself as a monster. Now, this is odd and contradictory to his previous statements.
I was just about to say, hang on, he pleaded not guilty, but now he's a monster.
Yeah, so he, quote, acknowledged that he might have left his house, but had no memory of the night of the murder.
It's funny how often that happens when someone gets put on trial for murder.
Mm.
Oh, so when all the, yeah, they'll be like, not guilty, I didn't do that. And then as soon as all the evidence comes in, they're like, well, there was a time when I blacked out. So it must have been then.
Well, get ready for it. In the report, he said, quote, I don't remember feeling the need for her to die. I'm not the type of person to seek revenge. Now, that is just such a strange way to word it, don't
yes,
you think?
Yes.
Also, I don't believe for a fucking second that you're, quote, not the type to seek revenge. What a load of bollocks.
Yeah. He can't even drive on Vice City, by the way.
What has that got to do with anything?
I'm just saying, you know, I watched one of his Vice City videos and he can't drive for shit. And he looks like his bollocks stink.
He was drinking during the live stream and I believe he makes a comment about drink driving.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, driving on the game.
I think he was like eggnog or something.
Was it not Guinness? No.
No. He had, it was a smaller glass and whatever it was like a whitey, creamy coloured. So I'm guessing it was eggnog because it's Christmas. Could have been velvet. Could have been Disaronno velvet, what you love drinking.
Love it. Sidebar there. I've never seen eggnog for sale over here. Not once.
Well, you make it, don't you?
No, like in America and shit like that, you can buy eggnog. You can buy like cartons of eggnog.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're not like that. We're not cheap. We get the ingredients.
We go all
and
out.
Make it. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever had it?
No.
No, it's not really a thing over here, is it? At all. Apart from in Stephen's gaff at Christmas, apparently.
Yeah. Isn't eggnog what Americans call a snowball?
I've never had a snowball.
Oh.
Hmm. Stephen also said, quote, I'm sorry for what I did to that family, to Natalie, and to baby Dean. I'd take it back in a heartbeat if I could.
That family?
Yeah, I'm not keen on the wording. Stephen's not one for the words.
He could have said, her family?
Mm.
Natalie's family?
Yeah, the McNallys?
That that
he,
family.
He could have named them all. He knew them.
Yeah. To whom it came in concern?
What?
To who it came concern? Is that
to whom it may concern?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even that I'd find a bit disrespectful because, again, you know these people. You've been in their house, you know.
Yeah, but it's everyone who's concerned, isn't it?
Oh, you're rounding up the family, Natalie, the baby, everyone.
Yeah, the ex.
Okay.
Everyone who's been involved, his best mate.
That seems very disconnected, though, altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, but that, if I was in that
family,
courtroom,
yeah.
I'd have gone, that, which family?
Yeah.
What do you mean, that family?
Specify, man.
Yeah.
So it's believed the reason for this, you know, sudden change of heart, it's simply another manipulation tactic by Stephen. He's laying the groundwork for his potential parole. But if you notice, he still doesn't admit to the murder itself. Instead, it's more of a, you know, I can't remember what happened that night, but if you're going to find me guilty, then I guess I apologize and feel awful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
On the 3rd of June, 2026, Stephen was sentenced to life with a minimum of 31 years to be served. One of Natalie's brothers described the conviction as, quote, pure relief and a bit of elation. He said that they are now able to adjust to the new baseline, now getting into the new normal. As Stephen was sentenced, he nodded as if to acknowledge his new normal. This was 3 years in the making, And although, you know, we can recognise that it takes time for cases to go through the courts and a conviction and sentence to be finalised, it doesn't make it any easier. That's three birthdays gone by, three Christmases. I read that Natalie had attended Pride with her family. That's probably three times Pride has gone by and her family remembered that day and it triggered memories, wishing they could make new ones. And that's just to name a few. How many other events and celebrations went by where it was a constant reminder that they were without Natalie and still waiting for an answer? Her parents said that during the trial, having to sit 2 or 3 yards from their daughter's killer was horrendous. It was the most difficult time of their lives. They described his actions as devious, trying to cover his crimes and even entering their home. I believe something that in hindsight had been particularly difficult for them to come to terms with was when they allowed him to come to their home and spend 20 minutes on his own with Natalie during her wake.
What?
Yeah. They allowed him the time to be in the room with her on his own.
Fucking hell.
I mean, this, they said, absolutely gutted them.
Yeah.
You would wonder, what's he saying to her? What's his intention?
Yeah.
I don't believe for a second that Steve went in there and apologized to her. You know, he had a moment of remorse. I could picture him being more like,
I can't believe he made me do that.
It's more sinister. Like, I'm getting away with this. You know what I mean?
I wonder if he recorded it.
I mean, I don't know. I can't see him having done that. But with Stephen, he's just a horrible fucking person. He even went to the grave with her brother.
Yeah.
You know, imagine how her brother felt being the one to bring him, you know? Again, the family, although they hadn't been together long, the family were so accepting of, you were in her life, your son was hurting, you were going to be having a child with her. We're going to bring you in with us, kind of thing.
Like, they can't feel guilty. They weren't to know.
No, of course not. All it does is showcase what decent people they are.
Yeah.
Her father has said that he feels a deep hatred for Stephen, whereas her mother said that she feels nothing towards him. That would very definitely be me and you, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking that straight away.
Now, in our last case that we covered, we did talk a bit about, you know, our opinions and how I personally believe privacy can be beneficial in cases of murder or abuse. But also, you know, understanding why family members may choose to highlight the case or choose for the spotlight to be put back onto the victim of a crime. And that's exactly what Natalie's family chose to do. During the investigation, her mother said, quote, "If anyone knew me, I'd be the last person that would be in front of a TV camera. We're just a normal family, but we're trying to keep the story out there. We're hoping that the killer had family or friends that know something and they'll come forward." And major respect for that. You're putting yourself out there for the greater good. Fair fucks to you. So, like I said, there was many delays before the case eventually began. Natalie's case we brought up in the courts every 4 weeks or so, you know, just to keep it going. And her brother attended every single time. Her mother said, quote, "We were very, very close. She was my best friend. We did everything, shopping, making crafts. But she had her own wee life too, and was fiercely independent. She was over the moon about being pregnant. We all were. It was our first grandchild and she was due to go for a scan on the Tuesday." Now, I mentioned, you know, even Stephen's friends, the family, they were all kind of getting bits and pieces together. They were very excited for the new addition. And some of the items which her parents had bought for the new grandchild, they were buried alongside Natalie. Her mother went on to say, quote, "I just keep thinking, did she plead for her life? Or her baby's life?"
She didn't want to be thinking like that.
But you will.
Yeah.
It's gonna come into your mind. Her mother said, quote, I just keep thinking of her on her last day with us. She had her boots off. They were at the fire. She was in no hurry to get off. She was so happy and looking forward to Christmas. She was really content. As much as Stephen's actions highlighted the bad in people, others reassured the family that there is still empathy, sympathy, compassion, and the sense of community out there. Her father said, quote, "People have come in their droves. Even on Christmas Day, they've left their families to come here. There's been people we don't even know who suffered similar tragedies that visited." Some fellow from Oklahoma, who was originally from Northern Ireland, rang the other day, offering his condolences. Her parents kept the door open to anyone who wanted to, needed to talk, share experiences, or whatever it may be. Quote, "I just hope she died instantly. I know she was very petite, but she would have stood up for herself. You keep asking, why? Why would anyone want to come into her home and do that? It was horrific. He didn't just walk in, pull a knife, and there was some sort of accident. He gave her an awful death." There was blunt force trauma. It wasn't as if someone punched her and she fell and hit her head. It was a frenzied attack.
So it's just jealousy, rage, fucking...
Yeah, I think the overwhelming, it's control.
Yeah.
It's not so much, I can't believe you cheated me. I can't believe you cheated on me.
Yeah.
You were going to leave me.
Yeah.
Sonia McMullen, the regional service manager of Women's Aid Federation Northern Ireland, said that the statistics of gender-based violence are, quote, extremely high in Northern Ireland. She went on to explain how this links to the history of paramilitarism in Northern Ireland and how violence became a normalised part of everyday life. So again, kind of links back to our previous case where we discuss how environmental factors can go on to play a role.
Mm. I honestly thought you were going to blame the British.
Well, no, essentially, yes. That is what caused this. Oh, I don't know what you're laughing at. You shouldn't have been there.
It always comes back to the British.
I mean, in this case, it's very fair.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have fucking been there. Natalie's family have been very vocal about not only the murder of Natalie, but how this is a wider issue. Quote, "If one good thing comes out of Natalie's death, you would hope it would help change attitudes and violence towards women and girls." Sonia McMullen said, quote, "If we look at the figures of 1 in 3 women experiencing domestic abuse, you can only imagine the amount of children and young people. Boys and men need to be our allies and our solution in ultimately ending violence against women and girls." The prosecutor noted, quote, "As part of this blight that is ongoing in Northern Ireland, tragically, 2 females have been killed during the span of this trial." Senior Investigating Officer Neil McGuinness said, quote, "He was very confident of avoiding justice for this and was playing the role of the victim across his friendship group, across the McNally family and the public in Lurgan. Those were 15-hour days for 6 weeks with no rest days. Most of my team didn't take any time off. They didn't see their families. They were there from morning to night. I met the McNally family very early on when I took over, and I made a commitment to them that I would literally work to exhaustion to try and bring them justice. To have been found in the circumstances she was found in was absolutely chilling, even for an experienced police officer." Catherine Cairns described this case as unprecedented. The level of premeditation, the use of a pre-recorded stream as an alibi. She said in her 27 years as a lawyer, she had never come across a case like this. Not just the planning, but the aftermath. The total manipulation of others and planting himself within Natalie's family. Catherine said, quote, "The case was unprecedented in terms of the premeditation, the levels of deception and concealment, and really, the extraordinary amount of planning to kill this young woman. There were so many different strands of evidence which all came together and fitted together to prove the case beyond any reasonable doubt. We have to remember the brutality of the murder itself. Then you've got all the other layers of cover-up, deceit. The way that McCullough ingratiated himself with the bereaved family, abused their trust, spied on them, manipulated them. You've got the framing of the ex-partner, but at the heart of this, you've got the brutal murder of a young woman and her baby.
Yeah, it's like a seven-layer cake, isn't it?
Seven-layer cake?
Yeah, it's not just an open and shut case of murder. You know, it's like you said, the, you know, trying to pin it on the ex.
Yeah.
Recording the parents' conversations.
Hmm.
You know, fucking getting 20 minutes alone at the wake. Just, there's just layer after layer.
Yeah.
It just makes it so much more than a fucking murder case. It just shows how much of a sadistic bastard he is.
Well, like you said, so many levels of deceit and concealment. And, you know, like the wake thing, I'm not entirely sure what he was doing. It's awful to think about. Or was it literally just, I mean, I'd say just a fuck you to the family. I can do, like, was it, you know, kind of, you said, was it his own kind of enjoyment to do these kind of things? Is there an element of that? Or was it simply he did it because he thought it would look best for him to do it? And he just stood in the room on his phone. You know, yeah. we don't know, but it makes you feel very uneasy to hear that, obviously. I think it's fair to say that although this case is about the murder of Natalie McNally, it's impossible to ignore the bigger picture, which is abusive behaviour, including violence against women and girls. Stephen McCullough believed that he was entitled to abuse, murder, and manipulate whoever and whatever to benefit and protect himself and his ego. Natalie's father said, quote, "He would always say, 'My Natalie.' This always annoyed me, as he'd only known her for 3 to 4 months. She was my Natalie." Well, Neil, that is the murder of Natalie McNally and the shy talk that is Stephen McCullough.
Hmm.
Thoughts?
I've said this about many people we've covered, but this one I mean the most. I hope he has a very, very fucking rough time in prison.
Yeah.
I really fucking do.
Stephen McCullough to me is, if you guys remember the survival of Morgan Metzer episode, her ex-husband, Rodney Metzer. Stephen and Rodney are kind of like a similar tier to me.
Yes.
They're just like, you fucking prick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just fucking repulse me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree with that one.
Pathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know where people get off having such a fucking ego. You know? I don't get it. I really don't get it. Like,
it was Stephen's world and we're all just living in it.
It's just the even after the murder, right? You've done the murder. Leave the family alone. Why are you still doing shit?
Yeah. Because it's all part of his plan. It's not enough to do that and get your way in control. It's, I have to be seen as the victim.
Yeah.
It's fucking awful.
Mm.
So, you know, you had heard of this case, but I'm guessing you hadn't really looked into it. You saw the sensationalized headline of the, you know, streamer alibi shit.
Yeah.
And actually did gain a bit of attention outside of Ireland as well as the UK because of that.
Yeah.
Now that you've heard a bit more in detail, anything that's kind of shocked you or something you didn't, you know, see coming? I'm guessing the ex-boyfriend thing. That was something I didn't really hear about until I looked into it a bit more.
Pretty much all of it. I didn't know any of it.
Okay.
Other than the fact that it was a guy who'd killed his partner and his alibi was, but he was live streaming and it wasn't a real live stream.
I think it's actually very interesting that you've said that, because so often we hear that it's, you know, a man who's killed his partner.
Hmm.
And then when you look into each case, quite often there's so much more in the background.
Yeah.
But again, we're so desensitized to man killing a woman. And like I said, that, you know, obviously we're talking specifically about Natalie, but it's the bigger picture. In that case alone, there's multiple instances of abusive, controlling behavior against women.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd actually say the biggest shock of the whole case is that it was the Brits' fault.
I mean, it always comes back round. It's the fucking Brits at it again.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we can't help ourselves.
I need to stop saying unbelievable because it's quite believable at this stage, isn't it?
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
So, auditor.
Jiko Bukin.
Okay. Is that a name?
No.
Okay.
So, in Japan, there are properties called Jikobukin, also referred to as stigmatized properties.
But you book in?
No. Jikobukin means accident property. So, if something has happened there, such as a murder, suicide, undiscovered body, or, you know, a fire, something awful.
Mm.
And if something like this has happened on the property, this information has to be disclosed to any potential buyer. But some people can find it quite off-putting, and so these properties tend to be cheaper to buy or rent. And because of this, some real estate agents or landlords seek to debunk the stigma associated with it. Enter Kazutoshi Kodama. Kazutoshi founded the company Kachimode in 2022 after having worked in real estate for 15 years and had dealt with many stigmatized properties. And his company offers the service of paranormal investigation.
What?
Yeah.
See, right, to do with the price drop thing, I get it. You know, like you said, if it's an accident, like a fire or something like that.
Yeah.
I get the discount because it's like
something went wrong with the property.
You're not going to be as confident about the property.
Yeah.
A murder, you can't do anything about that.
You can't do anything about that.
But
it is what it is.
But paranormal, like,
yeah.
Behave.
Well, bear with me now. So, should you feel the need to enlist their help, it's going to set you back 88,000 yen, which is about $550. And what you're going to get for this amount is an overnight stay from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And during this, Kazutoshi will set up a camera, an IC recorder, as well as checking the atmospheric pressure, humidity, electromagnetic waves, wind force, and changes in temperature.
I'd just get Zach Baggins in.
Quote, sometimes out of the blue, the camera stops recording and the microphone picks up no sound for no apparent reason. So what I'm hearing from this is your evidence is no evidence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This very on brand for ghost hunters. You know what I'm saying?
There's no sound. Okay.
That's a good thing, no?
Yeah.
He also said, quote, I make sure the equipment is working every hour, and at the same time, I record myself with the camera. So, you know, I mean, it's all good doing the overnight. What if the ghost is only active from like 7:30 to 9 p.m.?
Yeah.
Why is it always overnight? Why is it all, like, what is that? You know?
Well, I want a job.
I'd do this.
I'd happily do this.
100%.
Check the camera every hour. That's it.
No sweat. Now, in all seriousness, though, if this does provide comfort for someone, then, you know, you do you.
Mm.
You know, I'm not trying to slag anyone off. I do think 500 quid is a bit steep, though, just for an overnight stay.
Yeah.
I guess he's got to lug all the fucking equipment around, but, you know, 500 quid?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I could easily, right, not Norman can be a fucking idiot, but I could easily take Norman with me, train him to wake me up every hour.
Yeah.
So I'll essentially just go there to kip.
Well, every time my alarm goes off, Norman comes to, like, alarm me.
Yeah.
Like, even if I'm awake, I'm sat there, he'll still come and be like, are you okay? Is everything all right? The alarm's going.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a good lad. Now, in the time his business has been operating, Kazutoshi has advised over 200 clients and conducted over 80 overnight stays. He said that he has closed the majority of investigations without finding any anomalies. And the ones he has found, most of these can be explained by, you know, noises from pipework or creaks in the building due to temperature changes. Regardless of any paranormal investigation, the fact that a tragic event occurred does still need to be disclosed to the renter or buyer.
Do you know what I'd do if I were the buyer?
Mm-hmm.
I'd wait until he's there for the overnight shift.
Yeah.
And I'd go and make loads of fucking mysterious noises. Bring the price of the house down.
Right.
Just go and, like, you know, creak a door.
Yeah.
Or, you know, ooh.
Do
that sort of shit.
Yeah.
I do things like, get out. Just stand in a closet somewhere. Get out.
I love how you're saying this, but we both know full fucking well it would be the other way around.
No.
You'd be the one freaking out and I'd be the one going, go away.
No, not when it comes to fucking money. I'd stand in the closet and every time I went, get out, I'd be like, that's 10 grand.
But you do get what I mean with this. Like, so, like I said, it doesn't change anything. It's more so a peace of mind type of situation.
Yeah.
Now, he did run into a bit of trouble at one point. While investigating the apartment of a young woman who had died by suicide, the woman's father was bothered by the insinuation that his daughter was, you know, now a ghost who was haunting the property or whatever the belief was. And he was furious with the whole operation. Kazutoshi took the time to explain to the father that this was about removing the stigma by proving that there was nothing wrong with the property.
Mm.
He said, quote, as a complete stranger, you may feel unsettled when you think about seeing a ghost, but it could be someone's loved one. I think it would help tenants and buyers feel less reluctant by promoting understanding through investigations. And you know what? If that's his intention, I can really get behind it. Good for him. You're trying to fucking remove that. You're trying to remove the kind of, oh my God, there's something bad. There's a presence here. He's trying to say, you may have heard something. You may have seen something. But it can be debunked by saying it's the pipework. It's the water pressure. It's the temperature changes that are making the wood creak and crack.
Yeah, but I think this is all done wrong, though. I think this is all a bit backwards. So what I don't understand is why is the buyer paying this 550?
The buyer's not.
Oh.
It's the, you know, the estate agent, the landlord who's trying to bring the price back up.
Okay. That makes sense. I thought it was the buyer paying it. And it's like, no.
Well,
I don't understand that.
I'm sure there probably has been buyers like, oh, I need to get this place checked out. Yeah. And there's a ghost floating around here. Come here.
No, because you'd be shooting yourself in the foot. So you'd be looking at an apartment or something, and let's say it's 250 grand. Yeah.
Yeah.
But because someone died in it at some point, it's now 210 grand. I don't understand why a buyer would pay the 550 for then the estate agent to be like, well, you've just paid someone to clear it. So now it's 250.
But a peace of mind. You know, if you genuinely believe in, you know, ghost spirits, whatever the case is, would you not rather pay more, but you're happy with your purchase?
No. Do you know what I'd do if I was a buyer? Actually, I'd be a fucking millionaire over there. So say the apartment, it's supposed to be 250, but now it's 210 because someone died in it. Yeah?
Mm.
So I'll go and I'll be like, oh, well, I'm a bit worried about it, but I'll pay the 210. It's a fair price. Then pay the 550, get it cleared, and then flog it for 250, 250. But just flipping it without doing anything other than paying $550.
But you do realize they still have to disclose it. Like, it's still a house where a murder or what have you occurred. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but now
they're attempting to bring the price up. But I mean, someone could go, oh, fuck off. I don't give a shit. Like, I mean, what does that prove?
Okay.
You know what I mean? But I mean, like I said, I was a bit kind of like on the back, like, you fucking hang on now. This is fucking, you're exploiting people.
Mm.
But then when I realized his intention was to debunk this, I'm trying to prove to you there's nothing wrong with this property. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a building.
Like, it's a building.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They make noises, which that's also something else that really fucking annoys me. Do you ever be with someone and there's like a creak in the wood? They're like, what's that? What's happening? You're like, it's wood.
Yeah.
The expansion and contraction, lads. Come on now.
Yeah.
Have a bit of cop on. Yeah. Really? House noises, they're a thing, guys.
Yeah.
I fucking can't stand when someone doesn't understand that. Really, it actually infuriates me.
Yeah.
Mm. I have to say as well, you know, I understand the concerns with murder in regards to crime rates or even death in general, you know, in terms of how long a body went undiscovered, the cleanliness odor factor.
Mm.
Get that. But assuming that had been taken care of, it's been cleaned up, and I have a deadbolt, a baseball bat, and a German Shepherd by my side, I'm all set. Really, it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The history of the house.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a murder, is this a serial killer who's been known to kind of keep coming back and hanging around? Because that's a little bit, that's not great.
Yeah.
But other than that, if it just happens to be on that property, I'm kind of, you know.
Yeah.
We can move on from it.
Yeah. It's like, if you were to buy, say if you were in the UK, yeah? And you buy a Victorian house.
Yeah. Well, there's been some deaths.
Someone's died in that house.
Most places, like, someone's died. Do you know what I mean?
And how far does it go to be like, well, someone's definitely shagged in this room.
Oh, 100%.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Fucking just about everywhere. There's been whether it was that actual building stood there or not, there's been something awful that's happened there.
Yeah. Someone could have shat themselves in this room.
Every step you take, yes, someone is shat, pissed, fucking been attacked. There's something
gozzed.
Negative. Yes, that. I don't say God. I say hoggard.
I know, you gozzed at someone.
That's the difference between us, isn't it? That's really where we come to blows.
Yeah. Mm.